If I were to ask you if you remembered anything from last week, it would be a hard question. I don't mean that, did you remember anything that I said? I forget what I said 10 minutes ago. But if I reminded you of everything that I talked about last week, I just want us to remember we went from Ezra chapter 5 verses 1 and 2 over to Haggai chapter 1. And if you look up here, remember, again, this is not a history lesson, but I want us to kind of see how God works through all this. We're in that H and Z time frame, which really it's about 520, 521, somewhere in there. That's Haggai and Zechariah. But in that time, from the time that the temple foundation has been laid, it's been 16 years since they've done anything. Haggai comes to them, and of course, Zechariah, we're not going to Zechariah. We don't have time to do all that. Zechariah does it in real flowery language, and you know me, I don't talk real flowery. I'm pretty direct whenever I talk. So Haggai and I get along real good. But Haggai says, you're living in your paneled houses and you're just enjoying life and God is saying, and you're going through life and everything that you're doing, I'm just blowing it away. Go build my house. And that's really the directive that they got. And the part that I want us to understand is in the end of all this, he says, and I'm going to be with you. Now, how they forgot that to begin with, I don't know. But my point is, we do this too. We forget that God says, I'm going to be with you if you do my will. And they were allowed to go free from the king's decree, correct? They were allowed to go free. Anybody who wants to go home and build the temple, free to go. And here's everything you need to do it. And a little bit of frustration, hardship, fear comes along, and they back off and they stop. And the thing is, whenever you stop and you start getting along in life with everybody that's around, you forget about God and you get complacent. That's the point that I wanted to bring out last week, is we get complacent. Whenever we know that we have work that we need to do, and I want to be careful whenever I use that word work. I said that last week. But there are things that we do as Christians or need to do as Christians that we're called to do as Christians even today. True? And I wanted to bring this up last week, but we ran out of time. So I wanted to just back up to this real quick. If I were to ask you, as a child of God, what do you think you have a responsibility to do to be pleasing to God? Because God says, I'm not pleased to his people. He says, I'm not pleased. You haven't built my temple. Go build my temple. I'll be pleased with you. Do the things that I command. So if I were to just ask us, point blank, what is it that we need to be doing in order to be pleasing to God? Teach the word, okay. Pass the word, okay. Pardon? Do his will. Love him with all your heart, mind, and soul. Yes. Practice righteousness. Live your life to glorify him. Love one another. Richard? To believe in him. Now, you bring up a verse that I wanted to talk about in just a little bit. What does it mean to believe in something? Well, okay, but if I say I believe in something, If I'm going to say I believe in something, what am I really saying? I hear a lot of noise, but I don't understand. Okay, it has a purpose, it exists. I guess the point that I'm asking is there a reaction to that belief? Are you following what I'm saying? If I believe that Jesus is the Christ, and he died for my sins, and let's just say in Matthew, the end of Matthew, whenever he tells his disciples, go into all the world and preach the gospel. Is that something that I believe in him, and I should be maybe working toward that a little bit in some way or another? When we believe in Jesus and we know that the things that we believe in are moving us to move in the direction that he's leading us, it's not a work anymore. It's following or being a disciple, if you will, and following him and his will and doing whatever it is he commands. Does that make sense? Okay. There's a lot of people who believe, but that's a different kind of, the demons believe, people believe, but that's head knowledge. A deep-hearted belief in your heart is something that's totally different. That should be what brought us to Christ and moves us to live for Christ, if that makes sense. So that's the part that I wanted to kind of end on, because as we go into chapter 5 of Ezra, we're going to see that there's a different heart whenever these people get back to work, because they've been reminded by Haggai, God is with you. Do his will. He'll be with you. So let's just move on down the line. Let's go to chapter 5, verse 1. We read those last week a little bit, but we're going to do 1 and 2 again. So when the prophets Haggai and the prophet Zechariah, the son of Iddo, prophesied to the Jews who were in Judea and Jerusalem in the name of God of Israel, who was over them, then Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Jeshua, the son of Jozadak, arose and began to rebuild the house of God, which is in Jerusalem, and the prophets of God were with them, supporting them. You'll notice who's with them as they're doing this work. The prophets of God. So here we are. We've got a group of people that are going to start this. Here's where the fun begins. Verse 3. There begins to be resistance. The difference is now, how do we respond to resistance? That's what I want us to first look at. Verse 3. At that time, Tattenai, the governor of the province, beyond the river, and Shethbazoni and their colleagues came to them and spoke to them thus, who issued you a decree to rebuild this temple and to finish this structure? Remember, they were stopped by force of arms before. You stop. And they stopped. Here it is years later, and Haggai and Zechariah have convinced them it's time to get back to work and build the temple. Well, who told you to go back to work and build the temple? There's been nothing going on here for a long time. Why is this taking place? Now, again, you got to remember we're in the reign of another king. verse 4, then we told them according to what the names of the men were and who were constructing this building. You notice they're taking names? They're asking specific questions here. Who gave you permission? Who are you to go out here and build this temple? We want your names. I can recall in school you had the hall monitors. And they took your names down if you were out there and not supposed to be. And whenever they showed it to the principal or whoever, you got a good talking to, didn't you? Well, it's never a good thing usually whenever they're taking your names. But they're not stopping. So we told them accordingly what the names of the men were who were reconstructing this building. Now, verse 5. But the eye of their God was on the elders of the Jews, and they did not stop them until a report should come to Darius, and then a written reply be returned concerning it. Now, notice the response this time compared to whenever they came to him the first time and said, stop building. They didn't stop. Why? The eye of their God is now on them. They're not going to be stopped because they know they have to do this. They understand fully, and you'll see a little more why they understand this soon. They understand that they need to do this to be pleasing to God. Remember we talked about the fear that and the reverence that they had last time? And it is reverence, but it's also a fear, understanding. We're going to see, they remember why they're there or why they ended up where they were. And they sure don't want that to happen again. So there's always an element of fear of what could God do to me? Which begs the question, whenever you were baptized, were you maybe a little bit afraid of what would happen to you if you were not baptized? You call that fear. I'm not talking the stand back screaming in awe fear, but there's that feeling of dread that, you know, I got to do something because I'm lost. So, they have not stopped building the temple. They're not going to stop building the temple. This is what they should have done the first time that they were approached. But they were afraid. But now they're not. So, if you go on down, verses 6 through 17, you're going to get a copy of the letter, or what was sent in the letter, to the king of Persia. And actually, what this is a recorded response of the leaders as they've told the people, here's what we're doing and why we're doing. Verse 6. This is the copy of the letter which Tapnai, the governor of the province beyond the river, and Shethar Banazani, I'll get it right one of these days, and his colleagues, the officials who were beyond the river, sent to Darius the king. They sent a report to him in which it is written thus to Darius the king, all peace. Let it be known to the king that we have gone to the province of Judah, to the house of the great God. You'll notice they call him the great God, which is being built with huge stones and beams being laid up in the walls. And this work is going on with great care and is succeeding in their hands. Now, there's a couple of things to maybe take note of there. Are they just trying to hurry up and get a temple built? I know you've probably said, and I'm not going to take the time to look up pictures and stuff like that. You can look up pictures and look at that all you want. But you've seen pictures of the temple and the huge stones and how they're laid and the pillars and everything. It's quite a feat if you really want to stop and look at it to understand what it took to really build the temple. But it's interesting to note that these people, whenever they write this letter, they say, this work is going on with great care. Well, again, this is work for the Lord. Should it not take great care, our best efforts? And is succeeding in their hands. They're accomplishing what they came to do. So it's not like we're just trying to throw something up and make a temple. Then we asked those elders and said to them thus, who issued you a decree to rebuild this temple and to finish this structure? We also asked them their names so as to inform you that we might write down the names of the men who were at the head. So again, They're taking names. Somebody's going to be held accountable. And thus, verse 11, they answered us, saying, we are the servants of the God of heaven and earth, and are rebuilding the temple that was built many years ago, which a great king of Israel built and finished. You notice their response? Anything in there appeal to you as you read that? We are servants of God. And we have to do what we came to do. That's what we've been told to do. This temple was built by a great king many years ago, and they're going to relay why it was torn down shortly. But they're going, we have to build this temple. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. We're going to build this temple. I think about, and if you would, hold your place here. We go over to Luke chapter 2, verse 49. Had a couple of thoughts as I was reading that and thinking about that. There was a young man by the name of Jesus who was missing for a short period of time. So the parents of Jesus, they've been to Jerusalem, they're in the caravan, they're heading home, they get out on the road, and they begin looking for him, and he's not in the caravan, so they didn't find him, and they return back, verse 46, after 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the teachers, both listening to them and asking questions. So here's Jesus, 3 days later, sitting in the Father's temple. And, of course, his parents find him, and they let him know in verse 48, you know, we've been looking for you pretty hard. Why are you here? I want you to see what Jesus' attitude is toward God and his work toward God. Verse 49, he said to them, why is it you were looking for me? Did you not know that I had to be in my Father's house? Didn't you know that's where I needed to be? Jesus was always looking to do God's will. Even at a young age, Jesus was never afraid to do the Father's will. He trusted God totally because he was going to do the Father's will. There's another scripture if you want to go over Acts chapter 5. That came to mind. So Peter and others have been arrested for teaching, preaching, if you will. They've been told, you don't preach Jesus anymore. And they've been arrested again. They're standing before the council. And the council's trying to figure out what to do with them. And verse 27 says, they brought them up, stood them before the council. The high priest questioned them, saying, we've gave you strict orders not to continue teaching in this name. And behold, you have filled Jerusalem with your teaching and intend to bring this man's blood upon us. Verse 29, but Peter and the apostles answered and said, we must obey God rather than men. My point is, many times if we're not careful, we let things or people or circumstances get between what we really need to be doing if we're not careful. And we can end up being in just the same situation as these people back here in Ezra if we're not careful. But things have changed back in the days of Ezra now, if you go back to Ezra chapter 5. Because they now realize we have to build this temple. We're going to build this temple. So they say, we are the servants of the God of heaven and earth and are rebuilding this temple that was built many years ago, which a great king of Israel built and finished. Now notice verse 12. But because our fathers had provoked the God of heaven to wrath, he gave them into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, the Chaldean who destroyed this temple and deported the people to Babylon. They know exactly why they are in and were in the situation that they are in. And the sad thing is, 70 years before they ever went into captivity, they were told, you need to fix your relationship with God or this is what's going to happen. And they didn't listen. God called it, and he told Jeremiah, you tell them they're going into captivity for 70 years. Make your homes, make your life nice, best you can, because you're going to be prisoners for 70 years. You're going to serve the king of Babylon and eventually Persia. And you have to understand, don't forget, these people are still under Persian rule. They're not free Jews. They're still under Persian rule with the permission from the king, Cyrus, to go back home and build your temple. But you're still under Persian rule. So things are not easy for them. Thoughts or comments before we go on? Okay. Verse 13. However, in the first year of Cyrus, king of Babylon, King Cyrus issued a decree to rebuild this house of God, and also the gold and silver utensils of the house of God, which Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the temple in Jerusalem. He brought them to the temple of Babylon. These King Cyrus took from the temple of Babylon, and they were given to one whose name is Sheshbazzar, whom he had appointed governor. And he said to him, take these utensils, go and deposit them in the temple in Jerusalem, and let the house of God be rebuilt in its place. Then that Sheshbazzar came and laid the foundation of the house of God in Jerusalem, and from then until now it has been under construction and is not yet completed. So they've relayed to him, it's been this long since we've laid the temple foundation. Here's what the king told us to do, and it's still not finished. But I want you to see what they tell the people now. Now, if it pleases the king, let a search be conducted in the king's treasure house, which is there in Babylon. And if it be that a decree was issued by King Cyrus to rebuild this house of God at Jerusalem, and let the king send us his decision concerning the matter. You see a little different tone here? They've already stated that King Cyrus has given them permission. Now, if you know anything about, and I know you do, you know anything about written decrees from the Medes and the Persians and all that, once a decree is written, can you take that away? Nope. So, again, you got to sit here and wonder, why did they stop the first time? And the only, you know, reasonable explanation is they were afraid. And then after they got afraid and they stopped, they lost faith. And they started just becoming comfortable in their everyday life. But after they get the directive that, you know, God is with you. Haggai reminded them in chapter 1, verse 13, I am with you, declares the Lord. He told them, remember that God has set his people there and has a purpose for them. It's to rebuild the temple. So, they do not stop. They say, let's put it in the hands of the king. They appeal in a, what's the word I want to use? A civilized manner. They're not going to sit there and have a war or, you know, fight, fight or anything like that. They're just appealing to the authorities to, you sit there and you look and you see what the directive really is. We know we have the right. And if you'll take the time to go and search your records, you'll see we have the right to do this. They're that confident. Why would they be that confident? Because God is with them. And you got to remember, who holds the heart of every king and every person, and who molds them around like water? God. How do you think Cyrus made the decisions he made? And God said, I can already tell you what he's going to do years before he ever did it. Okay, so let's go on, verse 1 of chapter 6. Then King Darius issued a decree, and a search was made in the archives, which were in the treasures, where the treasures were stored in Babylon, and Ecbatania, in the fortress, which is the province of Media. A scroll was found, and there was written in it as follows: Memorandum. Verse 3. In the first year of King Cyrus, Cyrus the king issued a decree concerning the house of God in Jerusalem. Can there be any question as to which house of God we're talking about? Because there's a lot of people who have houses of God, right? It's the house of God in Jerusalem. So we're identifying, I mean, it's specific. Let the temple, the place where sacrifices are offered, be rebuilt, and let its foundations be retained, and its height being 60 cubits, its width 60 cubits, with three layers of huge stones, one layer of timbers. Let the cost be paid from the royal treasury. Whoa. That sounds a little different than what maybe they were expecting to hear back from the king. It's interesting to me. In verses 1 and 2, you see that King Darius has, I'll get it right here. King Darius issues a decree, and the search is made. So he realizes if there is a decree or there is something out there, I need to make sure that I'm obeying it. You can't just ignore it. He sends the record, search for the record, and they find the record that says this place needs to be rebuilt. It's interesting to me how specific he gets when King Cyrus issues this decree. He gives the length, he gives the width or the height. He defines the stones. He says the huge stones. Remember they said, hey, they're building with huge stones. And guess what? King Cyrus told them they could. They should. The wood. And he says, and let the cost be paid from the royal treasury. Would that kind of take you by surprise if you were king? And you realize not only did he say, I have to let them build, but I got to help them build. I got to pay for it from the treasury. I got to give them what they need. Let the gold and silver utensils of the temple, verse 5, of God, which Nebuchadnezzar took from the temple in Jerusalem and brought to Babylon, be returned and brought to their places in the temple in Jerusalem, and you shall put them in the house of God. Is there any doubt that whenever the king issued this decree that the temple is going to be restored and temple worship is going to be restored? I don't know about you, but as I've read this and I've looked at this many times, and I know I'm a wanderer and a dreamer and I think about things weird sometimes. I know. I go back to whenever these people went into captivity. And Nebuchadnezzar comes in, and Babylon takes them over, and Jerusalem is destroyed, and there's nothing left. And he takes everything back. All of these gold utensils and all of this stuff, he takes it all back to Babylon. And for 70 years, It's been preserved. Does that seem spectacular to you? Do you not see the hand of God working there? How many kings would have said, melt it down? Richard. Yeah.
By the way, it's
coming
under your taxes.
Yeah. 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 That's exactly right. I sit there and I've read that and I'm going, for over 70 years, that sits in Nebuchadnezzar's temple or whatever you want to call it, where he kept everything. And most kings, whenever they go in and they take all that stuff, it's looted, melted down, or whatever. Not this. Here, let's take it all back out. And you take that home and you put it in your temple. That's where it belongs. That tells me that there's something that even these kings know about the God of Israel. I fear him. I may not fear him to obey him, but I fear him enough to know you don't mess with him. Or that's what I see. So, now therefore, Tatnai, the governor of the province, beyond the river, Shethbazar, and all your colleagues from the, the officials of the province beyond the river, keep away from there. Is that a pretty strict decisive command? You keep away from them. I often wonder, I mean, you know that these people know history. And if most of these kings understand that through the years, whenever God's people or children came into an area and God was with them, did you stand a chance? I always think about a bunch of people circling this city for 7 days and shouting and the walls fall down. I just, you know, things like that come to my mind and I'm going, I wonder how many of these stories these kings have heard through the years. I don't know. But, you know, things like that come to my mind and it makes me think, you know, a lot of times these kings and these people who are in control, they fear God not enough to be obedient to him, but they understand there is a God of heaven and earth, and you don't want to make him mad, and you don't want to hurt his people. I don't know. But he says, you keep away from there. Leave this work on the house of God alone. Let the governor of the Jews and the elders of the Jews rebuild the house of God on its site. Let them build it. Don't bother. They have a decree, they're good to go. Verse 8, as Richard brought up, moreover, I issue a decree concerning what you are to do for these elders of Judah in the rebuilding of the house of God. The full cost is to be paid to these people from the royal treasury out of the taxes of the provinces beyond the river, and that is without delay. In other words, there is an immediate tax going to be made, or an immediate funding that's going to be made for these people. Anything that you need to build this temple, it's yours. It is yours. I don't know about you. Is that God in control? I can't help but see God is with you whenever you're sitting there and you go from being frightened and scared, where you're standing up and you're going, we're going to rebuild. No matter what, we're going to rebuild. God said he's going to be with us and we're going to do it no matter what the resistance is, we're going to rebuild. And God says, because you're now doing my will, I can be pleased with you and I can make the circumstances work out for you. And now it's coming out of the treasury of the people right there. And whatever is needed, how am I doing on time? Decide here. Let's go a couple more verses. Moreover, and whatever is needed, verse 9, both young bulls and rams and lambs for burnt offering to God of heaven and wheat, salt, wine, and anointing oil, as the priests of Jerusalem request, it is to be given to them without fail. So not just the monetary needs and things that they need, but even the things for worship. Anything that they need. God is making sure that they are provided for. Now, I said that to say this, and we'll stop here. You remember in the beginning, whenever they went back, God is showing them, I'm going to give you the opportunity. We're going to restore your relationship with me. I'm going to be your God. I'll have my dwelling place. I'll be next to you. How much is God willing to do, and how far is God willing to go to make sure that they can fulfill what they need to do so they can be in that relationship with God? Everything just comes together. You ever find that in your life? You're not sure sometimes how things are going to work out, and then all of a sudden, it just kind of all comes together. And a lot of times, not in the ways that you think or suspect, but it always seems to work out.